Radiotopia.
Welcome to the Kitchen Sisters present.
From PRX.
We're the Kitchen Sisters, Davia Nelson
and Nikki Silva.
Hi, I'm excited to tell you that one of our favorite Radiotopia siblings, Ear Hustle, is back with a new season. Ear Hustle is a show about life in prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast. Co-hosts Nigel Poor and Erlon Woods have recently been spending time at four California prisons and have a season's worth of funny, surprising, and unforgettable stories to share. In a recent episode, they were able to visit a groundbreaking prison hospice where they spoke to men who are grappling with the reality of dying inside prison. Also coming up this season are stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells, complicated mom-daughter relationships in prison, and incarcerated people who wonder whether they've become too comfortable behind bars. Stories about life on the inside told by those who live it. Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts. The Kitchen Sisters Present is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Malo tiempo, yo no quiero que me traigan desatino en mi soledad. Ángel divino, yo no quiero en mi camino la fatalidad.
My home was always very political. I mean, I remember my mother having two colored pictures hung on the wall. One was of Bleeding Christ, and next to Jesus Christ, Joseph Stalin. My father was always connected in politics, and as a matter of fact, he was one of the founders of the Communist Party in Cuba, in my hometown. I got involved with revolutionary groups through hatred of Batista. He abolished my first chance to vote, and I took it as, and I take everything else on a personal basis. I was writing for the underground revolution, and all of a sudden I was in the middle of these things.
Guillermo Cabrera Infante, the Cuban author of over a dozen books, translator of James Joyce's Dubliners into Spanish, writer of the screenplay Under the Volcano and the film Vanishing Point. Cabrera Infante, a one-time supporter of Fidel Castro, was living in exile with his wife Miriam Gomez when we met him in his apartment in London in 1983. We were there to do a story for NPR's series Faces, Mirrors, Masks, 20th Century Latin American Fiction. Intense and compelling, Cabrera Infante was passionate about cinema, satire, puns, tongue twisters, and about his lost love, Cuba. In 1967, he wrote his best-known work, Three Trapped Tigers, a steamy, experimental journey into 1950s nightlife in Havana.
Showtime, señoras y señores, ladies and gentlemen, and a very good evening to you all, ladies and gentlemen. Muy buenas noches, damas y caballeros. Tropicana, the most fabulous nightclub in the world, el cabaret más fabuloso del mundo, presenta.
From National Public Radio, Faces, Mirrors, Masks, 20th Century Latin American Fiction.
Guillermo Cabrera Infante, Memories of an Invented City.
Tropicana, el trópico en Tropicana. Our first great show of the evening, el primer gran show de la noche. Curtains up, arriba el telón.
For me, Havana was everything. The only comparison is like some hick from Georgia coming to New York. I was born on the other side of the island, not far from where both Batista and Fidel Castro were born, so that's a dangerous zone for me. And I left very early, when I was barely 12 years old, for Havana. And I've never made an effort to be anything as I did to become a Havanian. I can you recite, write down all the names of the streets of Havana without making any mistakes. I cannot even name, you know, the streets around here in London. For me, memory is everything. And for me, literature is made of memory or movies.
I said that this story would have nothing to do with Cuba. And now I'm going to have to give myself the lie. Because there isn't a thing in my life which doesn't have to do with Cuba. Cuba Benegas, I mean. The night that I've been talking about, I had gone to the Sierra with the pretext of hearing Benny Moré. But in fact, I had gone to see Cuba. And Cuba, the most beautiful singer human eyes have ever heard, is for the eyes what Benny is for the ears. When you gotta see her, you gotta see her. Come right on in, Cuba said. She was putting on her makeup and had thrown a dressing gown over her stage costume. She was prettier than ever, with a blue shadow around her eyes and her hair style, a little like a mulatto version of Veronica Lake. What's new with Veronica Laguna, I said. She smiled. Ready for Freddy, she said, widening the corner of her eyes with a black pencil.
Three Trap Tigers is the title that Tres Tristes Tigres had in English.
Guillermo Cabrera Infante.
The book constantly is being built right there in front of the reader. The novel begins once and begins again and it begins a third time until in the end you think that it won't be possible for the novel to stop ever beginning again.
That you, Olivia? It's me, Beba. Beba who? Beba Longoria, that's who, the one and only, yes. Hiya, darling. Oh, I'm so pleased to hear it. Me? Oh, couldn't be fitter. Yeah, well, you know what I'm like. All lazy bones and high cheekbones. Sure, darling, still in bed. As my granny used to say, the only place to drink coconut milk is right under the coconut tree. Oh, listen, Livia, hold on a minute, will you? Don't hang up. I want me a minute. Oh, no, nothing of the kind. It's just that I left my Chanel number 5 with the top off.
Tres Tristes Tigres, from my point of view, I'm a painter, it's like a collage. Great chaos with a great sense of order, a great sense of structure.
Painter and photographer Jesse Fernandez, friend of Guillermo Cabrera Infante.
Then there's another thing in the book that you have, which is all the tongue twisters. Even the title is a tongue twister. And then the double meanings. That was very common in Cuba. Everything had a double meaning.
Estrella when she was only Estrella Rodriguez, a poor, drunk, incredibly fat Negro maid, long before she became famous, and even longer before she died. She was an enormous mulatto, fat, fat, with arms like thighs, with thighs like tree trunks, propping up the water tank that was her body. I told Irenita, I asked Irenita, I said, who's the fat one? Because the fat woman seemed to dominate the Chocito. Ay, coño. Now I must explain what the Chocito is. The Chocito was the group of people who got together to get lost in the bar and hang around the jukebox after the last show was out, to do their own descarga, the Afro-Cuban jam session which they so completely and utterly lost themselves in, this world of people who plunged into the night and swam into any rock pool large enough to sustain nightlife. Oh, so there she was, in the center of the Chocito, this enormous fat woman, holding a glass in her hand, keeping time to the music, moving her fat hips, moving all of her fat body in a monstrously beautiful way, not obscene, but sexual and lovely, as she swayed to the rhythm, crooning beautifully, scat singing the song between her plump purple lips, wiggling to the rhythm. And the total effect was of a beauty so different, so horrible, so new, so unique and terrifying that I bitterly regretted I didn't have my camera along to catch alive this elephant who danced ballet, that hippopotamus toe dancing, a building moved by music. And I said to Irenita, tell me, tú, who is it? And she said, she's the singing Galapagos, the only turtle who sings boleros. And she laughed. And I drew up closer. And I asked her who she was. And she said to me, La Estrella. And I thought she meant the star. So I said, no, 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 no. I want to know your name. And she said, La Estrella. I am la estrella, Sonny Boy.
Lo que no le dijimos nunca a nadie fue que nosotras también hacíamos cositas debajo del camión. Pero todo lo demás lo contamos y toda la gente del...
Really, the novel is something very simple, taken from the detective novel, which is Chercher la femme, looking for the woman. And that's exactly what all the characters in the book are doing all the time.
Muchachita, ven acá y dime... ¿Qué cosa estaban haciendo ustedes debajo del camión?
Three Jump Tigers was a very important literary event that has created waves all over Latin America.
Roberto González Echevarría, professor of Latin American literature at Yale University.
Most characters in Cabrera Infante's novel are from the lower classes, and they are on their way toward the upper classes through show business. What Cabrera Infante is interested in mostly is that process of change that the characters undergo in order to turn themselves into what they're not.
Not only has he accomplished a mastery of the best of European and North American traditions insofar as language use is concerned, but also he has successfully done a synthesis of Cuban speech and of Cuban reality through language.
Eliana Rivero, professor of Spanish and Portuguese literature at the University of Arizona.
This is what has given him his niche in the new Latin American novel.
I'm not a Latin American, I'm a Cuban. Or if you want me to be more precise, I'm a Havanan. So for me, there's no tradition as such. For me, there's only the tradition of reading books. I stopped reading in Spanish somewhere around 1957. So I was only writing in Spanish then, not really reading in Spanish. Of course, for me, a great influence was, when I was 17, 18, was Borges, but also was William Faulkner, and also was Ernest Hemingway. There are other American writers like Dashiell Hammett and Raymond Chandler that were as important for me as Borges was.
I think that Guillermo's view of Havana is a Hollywood cinema view.
Filmmaker and writer Sol Landau.
Guillermo has a cinematic sense, and it goes into his novels. They are removed from politics, they're removed from history, they're removed really from struggle.
Quite frankly, I don't give a shit about history. On the contrary, I think that history is simply a book with a title that says history. And Three Trap Tiger is only a joke, a 500 pages joke. So how could you have a politics in a joke? You could find pain, and you could find puns, but that's all you can find.
Doctor, how do you spell psychiatrist? With or without a P?
He didn't agree with what the function of the intellectual and the function of a writer and the artist is seen in a socialist society.
Eliana Rivero.
And he didn't see himself as putting society's interest first. He saw himself as a free artist that needed total freedom to perform as a writer.
The role of a writer is very easy for me to say. It's a paper role. I don't think that writers have roles. That's for actors. Writers have only words.
Waiter!
Yes, sir.
Have you got any milk fat chicken?
Yes, sir.
Well, squeeze the milk out. I want to bring me a glass.
Groucho has been a great influence on me. I think we have a lot in common. I am not a Marx, not even a Marxist, but I smoke Havanas. I only really regret the fact that he can be such a comedian, and I can't. I cannot perform. At heart, I am a stand-up comedian who had chosen to remain seated.
It's rather difficult to believe that when I find you dining with another woman.
That woman? Do you know why I sat with her? Because no. She reminded me of you.
I was taken to a movie when I was 29 days old by my mother, who was a real film freak. I remember that my first joke, and for me that's very important, was when I was 3 years old watching a Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer production. And the lion appeared, and before the lion roared, I roared. And everybody laughed in the cinema.
Malo tiempo, yo no quiero que me traigan desatino en mi soledad. Ángel divino, yo no quiero en mi camino la fatalidad.
My home was always very political. I remember my mother having two color pictures hung on the wall. One was of Bleeding Christ. And next to Jesus Christ, Joseph Stalin. My father was always connected in politics. And as a matter of fact, he was one of the founders of the Communist Party in Cuba, in my hometown. I got involved with revolutionary groups through hatred of Batista. He abolished my first chance to vote, and I took it as, and I take everything else on a personal basis. I was writing for the underground revolution, and all of a sudden I was in the middle of these things.
Now that it's raining, now that I have to look at the city lost in the smoke of a pouring rain, this city somewhere behind the vertical mist on the other side of my office window. Yes, now that it's raining, I remember La Estrella. Because the rain erases the city, but it cannot erase memory. And I remember La Estrella's hour of glory, as I also remember when she fell from glory, and where, and how. I don't go to the night caves, as La Estrella call the nightclubs, any longer, because the censorship has been lifted. They have moved me from the entertainment supplement to the front page, and I spend my time taking pictures of political prisoners, and bombs, and Molotov cocktails, and dead bodies the police leave lying where they fell to serve as an example. As though the dead were able to stop any other time than their own. And I'm again on night beat. But it's downbeat.
New Year's Day saw victory for the Castro revolutionists as President Batista fled the country. Mob violence in Havana erupted volcanically as the news spread, and some semblance of order was not restored until the Castro forces entered the capital the next day.
1959, that was a terrible year. And a wonderful year too. But of all the years of our lives, I would say it's the most important, where there was more joy and also more anguish and more pain. It was after Batista had fled the country, the revolution had won, and many of us thought things were going to be wonderful since now on.
Cinematographer Néstor Almendros, friend of Guillermo Cabrera Infante.
First there was a newspaper called Revolución, which was the old newspaper during the guerrilla time. And that newspaper had a supplement called Lunes. That supplement was given to Guillermo to direct.
Hero or villain? At year's end, historians are divided on Fidel Castro.
Of course, the official authorities of Cuba, at the beginning, we thought they liked it very much, but very soon we realized that they didn't, because it was free. Anything could get into this magazine. And one of the issues was about cinema, and most of the pages were about Hollywood, Marilyn Monroe. They couldn't stand that. They wanted us to talk about Pudovkin, and which also we did, but only they wanted us to talk about those things exclusively. So the magazine started to have problems and being very criticized.
And in the end, because my brother and Orlando Jimenez made this short film, this documentary called PM, about people having fun in bars and nightclubs in Havana, the film disregarded the revolution completely. And it was banned, and we protested, the magazine was banned. And that was the end of Lunes.
At that point, what was at one time a free and easygoing cultural apparatus became a censored one. There was an economic blockade placed on the island, and with the drying up of consumer goods and commodities came the drying up of that cultural breadth and depth that had existed in 1960. And Lunes de Revolución became, in a sense, a luxury. I think Guillermo took it personally. I think he also saw it as a sign of what would eventually happen to him.
And I hear piano music and cymbals playing, and a slow, moist, clinging bolero, which is one of Cuba Venegas' songs. And I see her bowing all elegant and dressed in sky blue from tits to toes. And I'm happy that she's not singing anymore tonight, because it's better, much better to see Cuba than to hear her. And it's better because anyone who sees Cuba falls in love with her. But anyone who hears and listens to her can never love her again, because her voice is their missing moment.
Oh, people knew. I mean, people knew he was the great young writer in Cuba then, but the winds were not blowing in this direction, you see. I mean, they wanted social realism, they wanted things that were politically engaged, and he was neither for or against. I mean, he was out of politics.
Guillermo was interested in movies. He was interested in jazz and in that kind of culture, and he was really interested in the United States and in Western Europe. But where would he have gone in Cuba? It was a closing society, that is, it was a hardening class struggle.
For me, it was total disillusion. I knew that I couldn't believe any longer in anything that happened in Cuba.
Doctor, didn't I tell you I'm a widow? I married Raul, the boy who invited me to the party. You remember the story I told you about his brother, the one who kept a skeleton in his bathtub? Well, after that night, he came to look for me one day at drama school, and we went out together several times, and we became pretty intimate. And in the end, I was pregnant. And he refused to have anything to do with me after that. So I went to see his brother, Raul, and told him everything. And there and then he decided to marry me.
They didn't know what to do exactly with me, because my parents were founders of the Communist Party. I was with the revolution before it won. They cannot say, well, he is a Batistiano, or he belonged to the rich bourgeoisie. And so they found for me an official exile and made me cultural attaché in Belgium.
We went off to spend our honeymoon in Varadero. On the wedding night, he stayed downstairs alone, saying he'd come up later. I was waked up 3 hours later by a phone ringing. Someone from the police who told me that he had had a car accident. He hovered between life and death for 3 days, and then he died. first thing he did when he recovered consciousness in the hospital was to say my name.
I was glad of going away from Havana, but at the same time, I didn't really feel particularly... I mean, consider Belgium from Cuba, 1962. It was like the other side of the moon. But at the same time, I was away from everything. I concentrated on writing again. And all of a sudden, I won this prize that was coveted by several writers in Cuba. And when my mother died and I came to Havana to her funerals, I was retained there for 4 months forcibly. And that was the beginning of the end, or the beginning of the beginning, or the end of the beginning.
I told his family that he had gone out to find me something to eat, and that was why he was out on the road so late. His family always treated me very coldly afterward. But they were very kind when my daughter was born, and even more kind 2 years later when they succeeded in taking her away from me in New York, by telling the judge I was leading the immoral life of an actress. The child had the same face as Raúl, but this time in the right body.
I go back, you know, I go back in my nightmares, and I go back in memory in my books. So what do I need the real city for? And I don't think in terms of what many people call roots, because I am not a tree. Roots are for trees or for teeth, but not for people, really. And I've tried to extract my roots with laughing gas.
No, I think it's an advantage from the literary point of view to be in exile, because it gives you a vantage point to judge your own country and also to idealize it. I mean, the way he talks about Havana, it is the same way as Homer talked about Mycenae. It's an invented city.
All my books are banned in Cuba. I am a known person in Cuba. I don't exist. I knew what was coming to me when I defected, so I'm not surprised.
The attitude in Cuba is that Cabrera Infante has chosen to become Cuba's enemy, and so his works are not really available in Cuba, but his works are known. I think that his political stance against people in Cuba make it difficult for him not to be a persona non grata.
Mamá la negrita, se le salen los pies la cunita.
In the meantime, I went crazy. I suffered from acute paranoid delusions. Everybody was persecuting me. KGB, CIA, the Cuban State Security, all were after me. I didn't notice anything, of course. Nobody who's going mad noticed it. Miriam Gomez, my wife, put me into an asylum. They gave me 21 electroshocks. For me, of course, it was a period of 5 years in which I couldn't work at all. You know, my sense of humor disappeared completely. I had a sense of tragedy, but not a sense of comedy. Scott Fitzgerald was right. When something like this happened to you, it's like a crack up on a plate. The plate is broken, you piece it together again, but you'll see the cracks. Now I'm very well, thanks to lithium salts.
Later, we would go back the whole length of the Malecón, unless we drove to Mariel or plunged down into the tunnel under the bay and reemerged in Matanzas for dinner, talking all the time and telling jokes. When Cue talked about time and space, he succeeded in evading what he always avoided, remembering. The opposite of me, because I like remembering things better than living them, or living things, knowing they can never be lost because I can always evoke them again. I can live them by remembering them.
I'm still writing about Havana, which is all I care about, I care for, and I assume that when my let's call it a reservoir of memories are gone or are used up, I'll stop writing. But of course, I'll stop writing about Havana. Then I'll probably start writing about London, if I move away from London.
Cabrera Infante died in London in 2005. He never returned to Cuba. In an interview done by Carlos Fonseca with Cabrera Infante's wife, Miriam Gomez, she recalls, Guillermo would sit down to write, dressed with his suit. Soon after, he would remove his shoes, then his socks. Soon after, he would take off his trousers, his shirt, and he would end up almost naked in front of the page. He would do a striptease in front of the page. He was the type of writer that became the subject of his own reflections. I would often see him there at his desk, writing, and couldn't stop asking myself, what is he unleashing? What sort of private story is he telling?
Guillermo Cabrera Infante, Memories of an Invented City, was produced and directed by the Kitchen Sisters, Davia Nelson and Nikki Silva. Studio production by Tom Lopez at ZBS. Mixed by Flon Williams at Baez Recording. Excerpts and adaptations from the novel Three Trapped Tigers were read by Lázaro Pérez, Antonia Rey, Ilcatania Payán, and Miriam Gomez. Script consultant, Professor Julio Ortega. Field recording in Cuba by Kim Aubrey, Ellen O'Leary, Uzel Williams, and Alfredo Cruz. Excerpts taken from the film PM by Orlando Jiménez Leal and Sabá Cabrera Infante. Special thanks to Guillermo Cabrera Infante, Miriam Gomez, Suzanne Jill Levine, Elizabeth Perez Luna, Bro Adams, Charles Prentice, and the Cuban Ministry of Culture.
The executive producer for Faces, Mirrors, Mass is Joellen Ratliff. Series editor, Julio Marsan. Project director, Frank Tavares. Series producer, Frida Worden. Technical director, Lauren Kelly. Funds for this series were provided by the National Endowment for the Humanities, with distribution funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
The Kitchen Sisters Present is produced by the Kitchen Sisters with Nathan Dalton and Brandy Howell. We want to thank everyone who worked on this story and on the Faces, Mirrors, Masks 20th Century Latin American Fiction Project. This was a rich, beautiful, ahead-of-its-time series of 13 stories created by producers from around the country, spearheaded by NPR. We'll be sharing another episode we produced for the series about Jorge Amado, coming soon on the Kitchen Sisters Present.
Special thanks to the National Endowment for the Humanities and the National Endowment for the Arts, Art Works. The Kitchen Sisters Present is part of Radiotopia from PRX, a curated network of extraordinary cutting-edge podcasts created by independent producers.
Radiotopia from PRX is made possible with support from the Knight Foundation, and thanks to AdZerk for providing their ad-serving platform to Radiotopia. If you or your business or organization would like to support the Kitchen Sisters Present, we would love that. Please contact sponsor at radiotopia.fm. Thanks for listening.
Radiotopia.